Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got a perfect game. Edmund done by the king.
Hey, you! Are you right there, Apple?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
It is December 9th, Monday, one of the biggest deals involving two of the most massive names in the New York market have merged. This is very big news. Massive, massive implications for the future of the media space of New York and the advertising money that's going to be spent in the city. Massive merger, of course, between Omnicom and IPG. I'm just wondering if you have any hot takes or thoughts about it.
I mean, it's kind of been, you know, the thing that people have been talking about all over the city, you know, sports fans especially. I mean, here in the New York market, it's one of the biggest in the whole world, especially when you have rivaling sports teams, you know, within the same city with such storied histories and their own respective media conglomerates around them. I mean, it's really all that people have been talking about. Thankfully, I can't think of any actual sports transactions that have happened in the past few days involving any New York teams. So it's kind of been, you know, like an empty, really slow news week around here. But yeah, that's all really anybody has been talking about is this merger between the two companies whose names I've already forgotten. I didn't want to talk about it either. You know, it's sort of an awkward thing to discuss, but you know, it's we've gotten confirmation at this point, and I think at this point, you know, we have to just treat it like the bombshell of a story that it is. Timothy Chalamet knows ball, Brody, and there's no way that anybody can deny that at this point. I mean, everybody saw him on College Game Day making those crazy predictions, being the only one to correctly predict the Ohio game. I don't know if you just saw this today. People found a tweet back from 2010 from Landry Fields, the old ex-Nick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was a...
That's a name I have not heard in a while.
You didn't think we were bringing Landry Fields to the pod this week, but little did you know.
Not in 2024.
He was here. He's been lurking, just waiting to hear his name, and he's gotten the opportunity because people have found this old tweet from his rookie season with him and Andy Routens, where the two of them were in the city and they said the first person to find us and answer our trivia questions wins two tickets. And then a follow-up tweet 3 hours later, ha ha ha, the contest is over. Tim Chalamet is the winner. Found us at Grand Central. Congrats, Tim. See you Friday at the game. And then there's a picture of Landry Fields, Andy Routens, and a like 12-year-old Timothy Chalamet standing in the middle of Grand Central, chucking up the deuces. And he won tickets to a game that was played November 5th, 2010. It was Knicks versus Wizards, and the Knicks won 112-91. So for anybody who was thinking that maybe Timothy Chalamet was getting the answers fed to him this Saturday on College Game Day, or like that was some sort of stunt, I don't know that there's any greater confirmation of ball knowledge than choosing to willingly hang out with Landry Fields and Andy Routens in the year 2010 to try to win tickets to go see the Knicks play that year. Truly blew my mind.
Oh my God. I cannot believe that I missed this story, first of all. Just pulled up the picture, and that really, man, that's quite the photo. I'm shocked that this has not been unearthed at some point before, but as somebody who likes to call Timothy Chalamet Tim Chalmet as a joke, Landry Fields tweeting out Tim Chalamet in 2010 with this little douchey-looking kid throwing up double peace signs is really funny. That's incredible. Wow. Who knew that underneath all that, those luscious locks that he has now, that there was some ball knowledge rattling around in there?
I don't know if you remember this, but in like 2018 or so, it was somehow unearthed that Lil B went to like an NYU show or something and like knighted Timothée Chalamet. And so it's like, I'm so interested in like every aspect of this kid's life.
He's like just 15 years.
He's checking off all of the boxes. It's like he was just out there doing side quests.
He's
like
Forrest Gump.
10 years before anyone knew who he was. He's the Zoomer Forrest Gump. You said it. That's crazy.
Is it bad that I'm kind of now more okay with him playing Bob Dylan? Because I'm not really that excited about that. But like, and I feel like the movie's going to be not great just because like it's very easy to exaggerate Bob Dylan. So I'll be curious to see how that goes. But I thought it was an odd choice. But maybe, I mean, Bob Dylan grew up in Minnesota, but like he still is like a New York icon.
Sure.
So maybe Tim Chalamet running around with Landry Fields in 2010 is the push that I needed to get him over the hump of acceptability. A true New Yorker.
A complete unknown is not amongst my most anticipated for the rest of the year, but it's definitely one that I will be rolling out to see. So I hope that movie is good. I hope ball knower Timothée Chalamet gives a great performance in it. I've been pretty impressed with his work to date. I mean, I think he's largely earned his reputation.
Do we know where he stands on baseball?
I don't think we do. I would imagine, I guess I don't want to assume anything at this point.
Yes, I want to assume he's a Yankee fan, but I'm going to...
No, me too. I want to assume that too. But shit, maybe he's not after yesterday. Who knows?
Timothée Chalamet wears a Yankee jersey while out grabbing a slice of pizza. Okay, so I've got him. This is July 26th of 2023, spotted in New York, rocking some AirPod Pros and an Aaron Judge jersey, snagging a slice of 50 cent pizza. Or 99 cent pizza, or what used to be 99 cent pizza. Have you noticed they're all $1.50 now?
It's all like $1.99, dude. It's crazy. Inflation is out of hand.
Like inflation got dollar pizza. What the hell? It's dumb.
Arizona iced teas, too. Those used to be like the two things you could avoid on inflation would be you can get a 99 cent slice of pizza and a 99 cent Arizona iced tea. Now they're both $1.99. Unbelievable. Now it costs you a five.
We got to fix this country.
Luigi tried, bro.
Man. Luigi took a step. Trying, man. Yeah. I will say on that front, just real quick, one quick thing on that, because like it's very easy to like, obviously violence is bad. I would just say it's more violent to allow lots of poor people to die of preventable diseases. That's all.
I don't think that's a particularly hot take. I was a up and down so week either. For CEOs across New York this week. That's for sure.
some were lauded, some were murdered in the street.
Wide range of acceptable outcomes there. But
lots of different things going on there. Also, Timothée Chalamet is absolutely a Yankee fan.
Okay.
Nothing about him being a Met fan.
No.
Can't find anything.
Good.
So it's been a rough week for Timothée Chalamet.
Well, I guess we've skated around it for long enough. This is the Mudville podcast.
Just finally finished the long swirling flush into the toilet that we've been circling.
This is the Mudville podcast. I am one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I am your other host, Brody Staub.
And Juan Soto is a New York Met. He signed a 15-year... It sure is. New era across New York sports. It broke last night, being Sunday night around 9 o'clock. First one I saw with the news was John Heyman, quickly followed up by all the others, but I know being first is quite important, so congrats to Mr. Arson. Soto signs a 15-year, $765 million contract with the New York Mets. Steve Cohen gets his guy. This was the vision that Mets fans had when he took over the team. Obviously, that first run of free agent signings that they did before 2023 fell flat on their face, but they have reloaded, and Steve Cohen is ready to continue playing Monopoly with his ungodly amount of money, and he is using it to drag the New York Mets kicking and screaming into relevancy. Brody, I will just let you cook for a second. What was your immediate reaction to this deal?
So here's the thing. I was at work, and if you know anything about what it means to work in New Jersey, unfortunately, I was with a lot of Met fans at the time that this broke. And let me tell you something. That wasn't fun. I was kind of ready for this. And I said, too, right after it happened, they were all like, oh, King Cohen. Oh, it's like I'm working with 15 Salicatas half the time. they were all very excited. And I, you know, and I like them, by the way. I'm just being mean. I was not being copy. I was accused of cope, thrown out massive amounts, copious amounts of cope. All I said was I've accepted that this is probably going to happen. I already had, because I knew that this was going to come down to money, because Scott Boras is his agent, and that's what Scott Boras does. I was fully expecting that he would end up going to the Mets if they were going to be throwing out absurd amounts of money. On the other hand, I have been saying for a long time, and I did say on the podcast, I do believe that what's going to happen is that Soto is going to get a ridiculous amount of money on the table from the Mets, go back to the Yankees, say, do you want to match this? And if they do, they will, and it'll be a Yankee. And if they don't, he'll go, and it'll be a Met. And that, by all accounts, is exactly what happened. I also had predicted that Soto would get a $658 million over 14-year deal from the Yankees, which is $47 million. The Yankees ended up offering him $760, which is $47.5 million over 16 years. So I was off by 2 years. But I basically had the prediction down to a T, just knowing kind of how they think, which is giving him the most AAV to set the record and not really going much above that. And that's exactly what they did. Cohen decided that he wanted to completely just nuke the entire system and offered him 51 with escalators that put it up to 55 should he want to extend that contract beyond the 5-year opt-out that is in there. Again, I kind of had accepted that this is going to be the way that this goes. He's going to the place with the most money. Understood. The fact that the Yankees were even that close, that it was 760 over 16, I'm honestly shocked that they went that high. I'm more shocked that there are this amount of dumb Yankee fans on all the social medias. Not that I go on Twitter anymore. Haven't seen them there. Honestly, very happy because I don't think I'd be able to handle it. But all these stupid Yankee fans being like, hey, how'd you lose out? This, you're not the Yankees anymore. This is how you're cheap. You didn't even want to. It's unbelievable. You clearly don't understand what is going on here. They offered him what would have also been the biggest contract in the history of sports, not just baseball, not North American sports, sports history, period. And he didn't take it to take a little bit extra from the Mets, who have one of the richest owners in the history of sports.
The richest, I believe.
I think you're right. So look, you can't be mad at the Steinbrenners or Hal, at least for, you know, I fully expect, that's why I said 658 over 14 in my prediction. I did not think they were going to go to 700. They went to 760. They went to $100 million over what my prediction was, which, I, you know what, they did everything they could for him, and he was going to go whoever was going to give him the most money, and they gave him an ungodly amount of money. And I also was thinking, you know what, go get two or three guys, make up for it. It's not impossible. I think it'll be okay in the long run. A 15-year contract scares me as it is. I know it's Juan Soto, and it'll probably be fine. And by fine, I mean he'll go into the Hall of Fame with a Met hat on, which is whatever. It's so much money to spend on a baseball team, and especially when they're being taxed. As, you know, Cohen's a smart business guy. I know it's a toy for him, but how long will it take for him owning this team where it becomes an actual, like, business endeavor and not just a toy? Where he does start seeing, like, okay, I can't run this thing at a full deficit every single year. He wants to start making some money off of it, which, I don't know. We'll see. That's all conjecture. But there's a lot to dig into with the Soto stuff. I think I've said most of my piece. I'll let you just riff for a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think you touched very nicely on a lot of what I was going to say. I mean, there are so many implications when you have a contract of this size. And it's really important to note that we're kind of in unprecedented territory here with how we're going to have to view this contract and how we're going to be talking about it for the next 15 years, possibly five, but I have to assume 15. Because this was the biggest question mark of the offseason, right? Was where Juan Soto was going to land, not just because he is one of the greatest baseball players in the world, and whichever team he signs with is going to have that massive on-field advantage, but also because it had a ton of strategic implications and philosophical implications with some of the questions of like when the Mets were going to come back into contention. I mean, I don't think there was anybody out there expecting them to not be competitive this year in free agency because they were going to wait another year. But I think back to, you know, what they told Scherzer back when they were saying, you know, our contention window, clearly that first signing period for them was such a disaster. You know, they threw all that money at Scherzer, Justin Verlander. I believe it was Starling Marte at the time. I could be wrong. There were a few other guys they brought in that offseason, and it was a disaster. They ended up eating a
Marte
bunch of
them. Marte got like $20 million a year for like 4 years or something.
Yeah. That's exactly right. They ended up eating a bunch of that money. They paid like $50 million to end up trading those two pitchers for Luis Angel Acuna and Drew Gilbert. This really felt like take two. Right after Steve Cohen bought the team, he like immediately wanted to show, look how things are going to run now in Queens. I'm going to sign all these players to huge contracts. And like said it a couple times now, but it blew up instantly in his face. And this might be the David Stearns effect, honestly. I mean, this is a lot of why they brought Stearns in last offseason, is so that they have like an actual mathematician whiz running things along with the guy who has all of the money, because, you know, it's been proven time and time again that that alone is not going to win you a championship. You have to know how to spend the money, how to nurture the players that you acquire with that money, how to build a winning roster. I mean, it's a lot harder than it sounds, but to have Steve Cohen as your owner, obviously is just a massive advantage, even when we're talking about the hierarchy of power between like the top five teams or so in the league. I mean, we were wondering so long about what Soto's contract was going to look like. I think this goes a long way towards proving that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about when trying to estimate contracts, us very much included in that. I predicted Soto signing for $640 over 14 years. I didn't know that I was being so conservative there with my estimate. But like, yeah, that's where the discourse has been for most of this year, at least until we actually hit free agency. I think about that Yankee fan who brought the sign to the game late in the year that was made to look like a check out to Juan Soto, and he wrote $600 million. In that,
yeah, right.
In the barn. So it's like thinking looks of that pathetic. As basically as like, what is this unfathomable
is salary
amount
finance?
Of money for a baseball player, something that no one would ever sign, like for the comedic effect of a sign. And then 2 months yeah. later, you look like a fucking asshole because another team
an
outbids
idiot, like complete
that
moron.
By $165 million.
$165 million. You know what? Brandon Nimmo, his whole contract was 8 for $162. So that $600 million sign was literally off by more than Brandon Nimmo.
It's tough to wrap my head around that kind of money. I mean, especially because of the fact there's no deferred money in this contract. He's just straight up making more than $50 million per year, every year of this contract.
So, yeah, so that's the thing that I actually just realized. So I'm on Fangraphs looking at their payroll tracker. Something I did not know about this salary is it's actually 61 a year for 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29. It goes to 46 a year from then on. And the Mets can actually add $4 million to void the opt-out after that 29 season, so that it would actually go to $50 million a year at that point. So the fact that he's going to be taking the field on opening day, getting ready to receive $61 million for the season. $61 million for the season. $61 million for a year. The Marlins payroll is estimated to be $71 million next year. 71, all right? The Athletics, who now, if you want to go find them on Fangraphs, by the way, they're under ATH because they don't have a city named. $58 million estimated.
The Orioles, like an actual
the last
contender.
Was $63 million. Their payroll estimated for next season is lower than Juan Soto's yearly income. What are we doing? What are we doing?
It's a great question. And it's one that doesn't have a clear answer, because like the grievance with that system, I think, is with the cheap ass owners who will not commit to building a winning roster and instead cry poor and talk about how they can't go out and sign anybody because the league is rigged against them and all this bullshit.
We've dug into that plenty of times.
Yeah, we've dug into it so many times. I don't want to talk about it right now. I think if there is a sense that Steve Cohen is just objectively good for the game, it is in that sense that fans don't have to take those bullshit artists at their word anymore. It's incredibly obvious that no MLB owner is ever going to be forced to put out a product on the field with the payroll attached to it that John Fisher has been, or that the owners of some of these other teams have as well, that David Rubenstein did this offseason. And I think he's going to fix that. I don't think that is what Rubenstein ball is going to look like in Baltimore. I think largely that it was a transition year. I still expect them to be pretty active in free agency this year.
They're at $122 million, by the way, for next season.
So they're going up.
I would fully expect the Orioles to end up somewhere regularly with a $200 million plus payroll. So they've probably got some space to play with there. And granted, they do have to pay a lot of their young guys.
Yeah, yeah.
They just paid Gary Sanchez, by the way. How about that?
They did. It's true. Yeah, I think in like 2 years, we're definitely going to be seeing $200 million plus payrolls out of Baltimore. Maybe that's just because of the money that retaining. I assume they will be spending to extend Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. Maybe if Jackson Holliday gets back to some of his allure that he had 2 years ago, they consider him in that conversation as well. Precedent
Gunnar
stands,
won't be a free agent, by the way, until 2029.
Yeah, I can't even...
Grayson Rodriguez till 2030. Adley is not going to be a free agent until 2028. Ryan Mountcastle, 2027. They got a lot of time with these guys.
They sure
do. If they want to really ride them out, so...
The precedent stands, though. I mean, when you have...
Totally.
One player now who is going to be making more than a team's entire projected roster, that on its face is incredibly ridiculous.
When the Mets head out to Sacramento, that's going to be something, man.
Sure is.
Be something to see.
I would like to just sort of talk a little bit more now about what the Mets team is going to look like in 2024.
Sure.
Get to some of the fallout of this deal.
I've got thoughts.
Yeah. So the first thing to say, the thing that is kind of obvious, is Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto, that immediately becomes one of baseball's very best offensive duos. You are not going to find that level of explosiveness in one player on most teams in the league, let alone two. I think in terms of, you know, how it stacks up against other National League competition, the Mets can now match two of the Dodgers' three in their big three in that lineup, which is more than like 27 teams around the league can say. I think the Dodgers are the gold standard for both offensive firepower and dominant pitching. So if we're going to grade the league on that curve, most teams are probably somewhere between like 25 to 45% as good as the Dodgers are on offense. And by that standard, I would put the Mets at like 85 to 90% of the way there. You know, if they get Pete Alonso back or they cook something else up to add another star into this lineup, it's probably around like 95%. And they're most likely the second best lineup in the league if that happens, because I think we all expect them to continue adding to this team as the offseason goes on. Clearly, when you sign a player to a $50 million average contract for 15 years, you expect to open up quite a long window of contention, and there are quite a few players that remain on the market that will help teams who are looking to contend in 2025 do so. As of right now, December 9th, I still think that the Philadelphia Phillies and Atlanta Braves have better lineups than the Mets, certainly better rosters, in terms of lineup, I mean, it's definitely a lot closer. The pitching, however, is a completely different story. The Mets' pitching is maybe 15% as good as the Dodgers right now. And
Oh, that's generous.
And that's generous. Yeah, that's fucking generous.
That is generous.
They might, And they don't have anybody waiting in the wings to call up in terms of a farm system for pitching. I mean, Christian Scott's the one that you would have thought of over the past year, but he had elbow surgery. He might not even pitch in 2025, or if he does, it will be quite late. The rotation as of right now projects, I believe, as Kodai Senga as the ace, which that in itself is very risky. I mean, Senga pitched, I think, all of 4 innings this past season, so expecting anything more than like 140, 150 out of him in general.
5.1
innings. Wow. 5.1. Over under 4, he would hit the over on that one. But
Just barely.
Yeah, assuming you're going to get 150 plus innings out of Kodai Senga at any point, I think is a bold assumption, especially for next year. You would want to ramp him back up, kind of get him accustomed to experiencing what it's going to be like to pitch every 5 days as a Met on a contending team, because that has not been something that he's experienced. And he's your one right now in that rotation. Behind him, Frankie Montas, who, I mean, we were going to get into his signing a little bit later. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but they signed him.
It's funny.
It is pretty funny. I mean, they signed him for 2 years, $32 million, I believe, so $16 a year. They're going to try to work whatever veteran pitching magic they worked last year with Severino and Sean Manaea. Why the fuck not, I say. I mean, Frankie Montas is a solid contender to be able to turn it around. I mean, he's entering his 31 season. Did you know Kodai Senga is actually older than Frankie Montas? I'm looking at this on FanGraphs.
Yeah,
that's kind of unbelievable. Older. That's really surprising.
No, I remember him coming over and thinking he's going to be 30. Like, or he was either had just turned 30 or he was about to be 30. But I remember the number 30 being attached to him.
Right.
When he was coming in. Yeah, he was an older posting. But the thing about the Mets, you know, rotation that you just have to look at is the fact that they do what the Yankees do with their bullpen, except they're doing it with their starters, except they're also doing it with former Yankee bullpen arms. So it's they're trying to patchwork a rotation for what should be a $350, $400 million payroll team. That technically, you know, could work. I really have my doubts, especially when pitchers tend to, you know, be injured often. Kodai Senga, as you mentioned, is 32 or about to be. Frankie Montas is going to be 32. David Peterson is about 30. Clay Holmes is going to be 32. And who you didn't get to there was Paul Blackburn, who they acquired from Oakland last year at the deadline. Paul Blackburn was on the A's, he's like a high 4.5 ERA guy. 14 starts last year, 75 innings. Not ideal for, you know, the back end of your starting rotation. That is a guy who is a starting pitcher coming in, slotting behind Clay Holmes. I'm not, again, this is why I got told that I was throwing out a lot of coke. You don't have a rotation. You just don't. That's not a rotation. That's a joke. It is a joke to think that Clay Holmes is going to be your 4 starter. Frankie Montas is not going to be effective as a 2 start. You need to go bring back Sean Manaea, which I'm sure they can. I wouldn't be surprised if they go after Burns or Max Fried. At the moment, though, I don't want to. I know you're a Jet fan.
Was.
So I don't want to be totally mean to Jet fans in front of you.
However, have denounced the Jets. Just want to throw that out there.
That's fair. That's fair. As you should. It's not nearly as pathetic as the Jet fan who said that we were going to the Super Bowl, the whole thing, when you signed 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers. It is just. It just has a bit of that smell. Just when you bring in Juan Soto and there are still extremely obvious holes in this team that you need to fill, when Clay Holmes is in your starting rotation and he's completely unproven as a starter. He was a reclamation project that the Yankees got lucky to turn into a closer for 2 years. If you turn him into a starter, it would be one of the most incredible stories in the history of baseball. Like, truly, if he becomes an effective starting pitcher, has that ever happened?
Well, yeah, ever. I mean, it's happened. Reynaldo Lopez last year
turned into an effective starter.
He was a great starter. Yeah, he was a really, really good starter.
Was he a good closer or was he just, hold on?
He was a decent reliever. I mean, he was the guy that bounced around 6 different teams with Lucas Giolito. So he would kind of be like hurt a lot.
Oh, and they
would give him like the occasional start, but he would always come out of the pen and then last year.
Oh, was he one of those angels who ended up on the Angels?
I don't know if he was one of the Guardian Angels.
Or Cleveland.
Yes, he might have been. Don't hold me to that, but I believe that might have been the case. I know he was traded along with Giolito to the Angels from the White Sox.
He was starting games when he was young. 6 in 2016, 8 in 17, but then 32 and 33 in 18 and 19 before he moved into closing role.
He was a big pitching prospect when he was in the minors. I believe when the White Sox traded for him, because it was like Adam Eaton who they traded for him, which is unbelievable. But because they traded Eaton for Giolito, I think Reynaldo Lopez was in that deal. I could be mistaken.
So not to even be that guy. If he was a big prospect, and again, I don't know much about
Michael King, though. Lopez.
Okay, Michael King is the only good example. But again, that's from the Yankees system. So, I mean, like, also, I think King always kind of profiled as a starter. And then the Yankees just wanted to use him as that swingman type role.
Yeah.
They used him for length, you know? So I just, look, I'm not saying that it's impossible. I shouldn't say that. I'm just saying that it's extremely unlikely that this works out for the Mets. They see something in him, apparently, where he could start. So it's not impossible. I just, you're testing the limits of my belief, you know, that this is going to end up working out for you. The fact that they're penciling them in for the World Series. Also, the reason that I wanted to bring that up being jet-like, I don't know if you know this about the AFC, extremely tough conference. The NL, right now, you have the Braves and the Phillies in your own division. You have the Dodgers out west. You have to get through all of those teams to get through the World Series. And granted, the AL is weaker. You know, in a 7-game set in the World Series, technically anything can happen. If the Yankees have won game one of the World Series this year, who knows? Like, you know, things can happen in a 7-game set. Not always the best team who wins. Usually it's not, because the Dodgers only have one World Series title in the last 20 years. Point being, it's just, it doesn't matter how much money you spend. Like, yes, congratulations to the Mets fans. You got Juan Soto. I'm not completely bitter about it. I understand it's a big deal. It hurts that the Yankees lost him. We can get into what the Yankees are going to pivot to in a minute. This is not a golden ticket to the World Series or a World Series title that it might seem, because the rotation is a mess. The bottom of your lineup, I'm sorry, it's not great. It's young. It could be good. You know, there's potential there. All I'm saying is pump the brakes. You know, be excited about Juan Soto for sure, but the rest of your team needs work. That's all.
Jordan Hicks, by the way, another example of a converted reliever. Totally. But I do think that they're largely trying to ride the coattails of Mike King and Reynaldo Lopez, though, with that Clay Holmes signing, especially with Holmes being that, like, you know, sinker slider type pitcher. Some similarities, I guess, to Mike King. Obviously, Mike King is a much better pitcher than Clay Holmes.
We've watched a lot of both of them.
No, not at all. I am completely okay with the Mets having Clay Holmes. I mean, if they turn him into an effective starter, I will genuinely be very impressed. I don't know how many innings they would expect to get out of Clay Holmes as a starter. I can't imagine it's any more than like 120. I don't think he has more than that in his arm. I mean, and the Mets can't go out and do that. Give us 120 and you're fine thing that the Dodgers are doing with their Blake Snell signing and their Tyler Glasnow trades, getting these like super elite stuff pitchers that don't really give you much length. The Mets can't really do that right now unless they go out and get like three more pitchers. So unless they trade for Garrett Crochet, they sign Corbin Burns, even with those two names in your rotation, which I don't know if they'll get. I bet they get one of them. Maybe they'll get both. But even if they do, Clay Holmes is still not who you want to see as you're projected for right now. Like, you want that.
No.
You want Clay Holmes to be the guy that three most out of the pen, which is the role that the Yankees had him in after Luke Weaver established himself as the closer. And that was like a difficult decision to make, but you know, eventually it was nice that Weaver forced their hand. But like, Holmes blew 10 saves, so maybe they want to get him out of the high leverage.
Holmes has shown that he has command issues, and especially when he has command issues, they spiral, like they snowball. So maybe it would help him to have more space between his outings, like, you know, once a week. Maybe that, you know, being regimented, that you know you're pitching once every five games, maybe that could help him. Maybe approaching games with a starter's mentality will be different than him entering the ninth inning in a big spot. You know, like, you have room to work with, you know, make mistakes and keep going and hope your offense can pick you up over the course of five or six innings, I guess, you know, rather than having like three big outs to get, you know, maybe he's more suited for that. Like, again, those are mental things that I can't really get into. All I can tell you is that having watched him a lot, I would be shocked to see his stuff, his command presence transfer to starting. I just, you know, it's hard to believe that it can happen because we haven't seen it. So if we see it, amazing. I just have a hard time believing it'll happen.
One of the last things I think that I want to say about this current Mets team, and like you said, I don't want to seem too much like I'm just going out there and trying to like hate on the team that just signed Juan Soto away from the Yankees, but I do think it's
fair. Two things
fair.
Can be true.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I could be upset and your team can still not be that good.
Exactly. I do think it's fair to say that people are really valuing Mark Vientos very, very highly in conversations about what the Mets lineup is going to look like. Like saying stuff like he's hitting after Lindor and above Vientos. Like those are two names that are in the same conversation. And I think they're making assumptions that might leave them a little bit disappointed because Mark Vientos is a great hitter. I'm not denying that at all. Like I think if they do end up moving him to first, they don't bring back Pete. He'll be pretty formidable there. Like hit 27 home runs last year. He's got pop to compete with like the best power hitters in the league.
He looks like he could hit 40 or 45.
He could. Yeah, he could. There's a lot of swing and miss in his profile. And that is not anything new. Like it's why he was sort of a back end top 100 prospect for the past few years. Is that people weren't really sure about his ability to put the bat on the ball against elite big league pitching. And like last year, even he ran, I think it was like a 30% whiff rate. Let me actually pull this up so I can know.
He was fourth percentile in whiff rate. He was 24th percentile in chase rate, eighth percentile in K rate, 40th percentile in walk rate, but he was 92nd percentile in barrel rate, 80th percentile in hard hit rate.
Right.
I have his stat cast up.
There you go.
an 89th percentile batting run value. So you're right. Like I think what people are excited about is his potential. I don't think they talk about that coming from his season last year. Like he flashed some serious potential. And I saw it, you know, myself for sure firsthand, like thinking there was a Cub game in the summer where he hit one of the craziest homers that I've seen like a young hitter hit. And actually, if you look at his stat cast, I just found it because if you look at his spray chart, it's the one to dead center, the farthest away. and that is the shot that he hit against the Cubs. I mean, that thing was absolutely liquefied. He destroyed that ball. And I remember seeing him hit that and just think like that kid can hit. And granted, you know, like most big leaguers can hit a moonshot, but there was something about that swing that just, you could tell like he's comfortable, he's locked in and he has potential, or he has the potential to really do some damage. That being said, he is no Aaron Judge in terms of protection. So Juan Soto might walk 200 times next season. Cause who's going to rather face Mark Vientos, who's going to rather face Juan Soto than Mark Vientos? So I just like, again, I love Soto, so it's, you know, I am upset about losing him. I want to make sure that it's clear on what you just acquired. You know, you didn't acquire a whole rotation, and you mainly got a guy who's going to walk a lot in a lineup that does not have significant protection for him. Lindor is probably going to have a great season, for sure. Be excited about that. If you bring back Alonso, maybe he has a bit of a better year, you know, hitting with Soto in front of him. But Soto's probably going to walk a lot. You know, he's not going to get the same pitches that he got hitting in front of Aaron Judge, which also, not that the porch helped him a ton, but, you know, acting like he's going to go out there and hit you another 45 homers in Citi Field is also kind of ridiculous. Citi Field is a hard place to hit. Let's all calm down. Let's, you know, be excited for sure. The Mets are better today, 100%, but they still have work to do.
The numbers that I'm really looking at with Mark Vientos, 34.4% whiff rate, 32% chase rate. For a guy that's going to be hitting amongst the like elite of the elite, I think you want him to take more pitches. you know, maybe that's something they're going to be able to work with him on this year, see if he can draw some more walks.
He's got the best guy on his team to learn from.
So. Absolutely. He's also 25, so it's like, you know, at that point, mm-hmm. you know, how much more are you going to be developing your offensive profile, especially when it's something as, you know, like natural, I guess, if that's the word I'm looking for, or just like inherent as play innate. Skills. Innate, yeah, there you go. The whiff rate there is really what is alarming to me. Like, that is legitimate, like, you're on thin ice. I kind of expect the whiff rate to go a little bit down. Like, I think he's at such an extreme there that either we see a little bit of regression towards the mean, or he kind of falls off a cliff. And I don't expect him to fall off a cliff. But at the same time, if people are expecting October 2024, Mark Vientos to be the player that you're going to get for the next 5-6 years, I do think you're going to be a little disappointed, because he's going to strike out a lot. It's going to be interesting to see how pitching adapts to him as he becomes more of a like universal threat, and as the Mets become, you know, one of the very top teams on opposing scouts' radar. Yeah, I mean, I do think there are question marks with Vientos that I'm going to be looking closely to see how those are trending in the first, like, 6 weeks or so of the season. But this is not an ideal Mets lineup in the current situation. You know, you've got some guys in there like Jeff McNeil, Tyrone Taylor, maybe Brett Beatty that you don't necessarily want in the starting lineup of what should be a World Series contender. They should be able to work around that.
Similar to the Yankees. They've got your big star in Lindor making a ton of money. You know, now you bring in Soto, then you have some aging veterans. And, you know, I mean, Brandon Nimmo is probably better than whoever the third best hitter, fourth best hitter is on the Yanks. But, I mean, and Alvarez has way higher upside. You know, you saw a flash here and there from Tyrone Taylor, but he's like 31 and he's like a decent center fielder, like defensively. Like, you're not really looking for him to be a bat. So, you know, I just like, and Starling Marte is 37. Like, they're, you know, they definitely can compete in the National League. I just, it's not being delivered, you know, on a silver platter the way that the AL could be. The NL is really tough. So they are going to still need upgrades. You know, they did get Jose Siri, who's going to probably be playing a good amount, like great defender and not a great hitter. And again, we touched on the rotation there, but I would be surprised to see this team do much better than they did last year in general. Again, like, the team is better today. I think you do need to go bring back Pete. I wouldn't be shocked again if they dip more into the pockets and sign another free agent. I am just, I'm not sold.
No, I'm not sold on this team in its current state at all. I don't think that they have anywhere near the amount of pitching that they will need to compete in the postseason. The first thing that I have to say about that is that we've still got quite a long time left in this offseason. For sure. And would not be remotely surprised if even in the next 3 to 4 days, we go out and we see the Mets acquire two more players, maybe even three. Probably both starting pitchers, because that is what needs to be addressed on this roster. Like, that really isn't up for debate. You need more pitching right now if you're the Mets.
Their payroll is estimated at $250 right now for next season. So that means that you can definitely expect them to spend some more money.
Yeah, I predicted Corbin Burnes to them in our free agency predictions. I think I probably stand by that right now. Max Fried,
get $40 million a year.
Yeah, you might. Max Fried is the other name, I think. Yep. I predicted him to the Orioles, but, you know, I could see those two pitchers going to those two teams sort of in either order. Like, that really wouldn't surprise me at all. But, yeah, if you go out, like, tomorrow and you see Corbin Burnes to the Mets, $35 million a year, I'm not going to be surprised one bit.
I would think that this is a good spot to switch our focus to the Yankees.
I agree.
Because as we mentioned, that the Mets are currently sitting at 251. The Yankees now, with the loss of Soto, are sitting at $230 million in payroll for next season. Now, what does worry me a little bit is that the Yankees are then in striking distance to reset the luxury tax. I don't think that they're going to be doing that. That would be a little surprising if they stuck under 240. I don't think they'll be doing that. That being said, it is on the table, and I would not Like, it would have its benefits if they did. The Yankees are very financially conscious. Not cheap, not calling the Yankees cheap because that's not true. But they are very financially conscious. So them deciding to take the season to reset the luxury tax, mainly work off of trades, maybe try to get rid of some of their dead weight that they have a really good amount of, namely, I would say Trent Grisham. They have JT Brubaker. They're paying $2 million. Jose Trevino is expected to get like $3.5 million. Like, there's some guys that they could cut some extra money if they wanted to. So I wouldn't be shocked if they tried to do that just because, you know, they're kind of at an offseason where they could be transitional into moving towards like a fresh set and next season go after maybe Kyle Tucker in the free agent market. But that being said, they're the Yankees, and they probably are going to be doing everything they can to still compete because that's what they do. So I don't know if you pivot and go get an Anthony Santander. I don't think they go after Pete Alonso. I think that's a terrible optic. And I'm not saying they wouldn't do it just purely because of optics. I also think they probably don't really, you know, love the skill set of an aging bad defensive first baseman who hits 230. I know that he's a good power hitter, but he's another big righty who doesn't really play good defense, and that is not a thing that they need right now. He'd be making way too much money for what he brings to the table. I do still think Christian Walker fits better for what they need. There was another report today that the Yankees are interested in Nolan Arenado, which was part of my offseason plan a few months ago. So I will be taking all of your applause whenever you're ready to give them to me. It just makes sense, I think, in my opinion. Again, he is a righty, so that part is a little worrying, and you definitely need to now replace your lefties because Verdugo, Soto, and who is your other one? Who am I missing? Oh, and Rizzo. Rizzo's gone. Yeah. So, yeah, Verdugo, Rizzo, and Soto are all gone. Those were your three lefties last year. So now you need to go out and fix that. So Santander's switch hitter, possible. I mean, Christian Walker, is he a lefty? No, he's a righty. No. So you'd have to go figure out a way to replace some lefties. But there's limited options. Bellinger is a trade option. I don't know. What are you thinking?
There's no plan B for the Yankees, I think, when the conversation for so long has been about Juan Soto. Yeah. Not in 2025, at least. That doesn't mean that there aren't moves they can make to immediately improve their roster, though. It means that there's no player anywhere close to as talented as Juan Soto who they can turn to and say, all right, we didn't get our guy, we're going with you instead as the replacement. That person does not exist. In all likelihood, the Yankees will sign a couple free agents this offseason. It does sort of seem like, based on what I heard today from Brian Cashman, that had they acquired Soto, that would have been, you know, pretty much it for the offseason, aside from, you know, filling in standard, like, one war guys. Yeah, you know, now that we saw the contract, that makes a ton of sense. But that's not the case now because they didn't get him. So, like we said, they've got quite a bit of money to work with. Maybe, you know, Teoscar, Christian Walker, Anthony Santander, a lot of the names you said already, Alex Bregman's available. Ultimately, the players they are able to go after.
How do you feel about trying to trade for Vladimir Guerrero?
Try it, sure. I don't see it happening, but, I mean, I'm willing to talk about that. I actually, just because you said that, I'll plug. I wrote last week on the Mudville Patreon, I created a bunch of hypothetical trades that I think if we see certain players dealt this offseason, these are sort of my approximations of what the return for those players might look like. At the end, I threw in two hypotheticals that I made clear in the article I don't think are going to happen, but I did try to predict what a trade for the last year of both Vlad and Kyle Tucker's contract could look like. In what I wrote, I had Vlad being traded to the Cubs and Kyle Tucker being traded to the Dodgers. Don't kill me for that last one. I think to get Vlad, it would require an amount of prospect capital that, one, I'm not sure the Yankees have, and two, if they do have, they seem to be historically reluctant to part with. So, I mean, do I like the idea of trading for Vlad? Absolutely. I don't necessarily think it's possible, though. I think the players that the Yankees are able to go after right now are going to be guys that you can add to an established core and hope that the roster meshes together and gets hot at the right time, which, given the Yankees' situation, could be exactly what they need. Like you said, the National League is so strong right now. Like, that really cannot be overstated. Like, all of the cool kids are in the National League right now. The AL is weak. It is the most wide open it's been in a long time. Like, for all of the question marks that the Yankees roster has, and as unconfident as I am in their ability to effectively plug all of those holes before the start of the season, or frankly even at this upcoming trade deadline, I still think it's very likely that they could be the American League favorites in 2025, even with all of this stuff that I'm saying about Juan Soto being irreplaceable and no player on next year's team being able to even come close to live up to the performance he gave, or even be approached by the organization with that type of production in mind. Like, they're going to be going after players that fill a very important role, but that you can't hang your hat on for a decade.
Well, that's the thing, too, that's interesting. Is there, can you name whoever the next massive mega superstar free agent would be at this point? I mean, really, like, would think
Tucker and Vlad are the ones that...
Are not to the level of Juan Soto. I mean, Tucker is great, but he's not Juan Soto. I mean, again, there's not many guys like Juan Soto. There's very few, actually. The Yankees have one in Aaron Judge, but they passed up on Bryce Harper, who at the time was, you know, another one, and Harper, I think, was... you know, a mistake for them to pass on. Free agents like this don't come around very often. So, like, you know, I think the biggest priority going into next year is that you have to land a Kyle Tucker if you want to, you know, continue to be able to be taken seriously as a free agent, you know, hub or whatever. There's not a lot of guys that you can do this with. So if you're Brian Cashman, you're going to have to now be very smart about where you spend this money. Anthony Santander is going to get overpaid. That's the nature of being a free agent who's second to Juan Soto in the offense department this offseason. Like, there's going to be a team that has to pivot to him because there's not a lot else available. So are you going to be the team that does that, that gives him more money than he probably is worth? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he does end up with the Yankees. I did say in our predictions, whichever team does not get Juan Soto will get Anthony Santander. I do think that's possible. Him being a switch hitter helps him. 44 homers for a .235 average. You know, in 2023, he hit 28 homers for .260, .257. So, you know, I think he probably was trying to pump his power numbers up so he could get paid more, because, you know, that's how you get paid. And hitting in Yankee Stadium would probably help him a little bit. But he has a lot of pulled homers to right, so that, you know, that definitely would help him. So the guy is not there. Like, the guy to throw hundreds of millions of dollars at on the market, you said Kyle Tucker, we talked about Vlad. That's sort of it. For like a few years. Like, you know, I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr. is going to be a free agent in a few seasons after his contract runs out with the Braves, but he's going to be close to 30. He gets hurt all the time. Maybe Elly De La Cruz, but we'll see what he does. You know, if he ends up getting moved to the outfield or something.
That's too far, you know, down the road, I think.
Like, it is. And that's the thing. That's in like 5 years. But Bobby Witt is locked up. You know, like, I can't even think of who else would. Like, Jose Ramirez is not going anywhere. Like, who superstars around the league are who even would possibly be available? There's no, like, none of those Dodgers guys are going anywhere. There's no, like, real young hot shot, like, that came up through the minors or something that's been cooking for a little bit. It's all right now, like, teams have been smarter about locking up guys younger. Again, we talked about the Orioles guys being years away from free agency. Like, I think you kind of just have to get ready to throw a lot of money at Kyle Tucker next season. Or Vlad, but I don't know. I think right now this is not the time to panic and go spend too much money on Anthony Santander. I think you probably have to figure out a better way to do it. I'm not exactly sure who that even is, so I don't know.
I think it's all about accepting that immediately for this offseason, you're not going to be able to have like a 10-year dynasty window established by opening day of 2025. It's just not possible. I was actually saying, even before free agency happened, that I felt like if the Yankees weren't able to get Soto, that their plan B should be Kyle Tucker specifically. I actually saw today the Astros said that they would be open to discussing trades for Kyle Tucker and Framber Valdez. I think like if that becomes an actual option and they aren't just sort of, you know, bluffing to try to get some team to offer a ridiculous overpay, that is where you have to look. Because if you're the Yankees and you want to pair a guy with Aaron Judge, who is the closest thing you can get to Juan Soto, because I don't think we're going to see a player of that caliber hit free agency for a very long time. And that is why this bidding war that we just saw come to a close was so important, because it was so unprecedented and because we hadn't seen a player like that at age 26, you know, hit the open market and command the entire flow of that conversations went down. I mean, it's just really,
and get
really
every giant
wild
market team spending, by the way. Yeah. That doesn't happen very often, where everybody that can spend is.
Yeah.
So this was, that's why this number is so high too. It's all, it's as much as it is who he is, it's also circumstantial. So,
of course. So yeah, I mean, if we're looking at free agency specifically as a way to find that player, you know, if it's not next year, which would be Tucker or Vlad, the class after that I'm looking at right now looks like a lot of pitching. Very, very
the next couple
pitcher
years
heavy.
Lots of pitching.
You know, Acuna, Luis Robert have club options, but they're both going to be picked up because these players signed awful contracts.
Yep.
What we would be likely looking at would be Garrett Crochet, 400-year-old Chris Sale, Yandy Diaz,
God, that age.
Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia.
DJ LeMahieu will be on the market.
He sure will. J.P. Crawford, Kevin Gausman, Freddy Peralta, Jesus Luzardo, Sal Perez, who also will be 400, and Jorge Soler. So that really just goes farther towards confirming to me that if either of those potential free agents for next year, Tucker or Vlad, become even the least bit available, which as of today it appears like Kyle Tucker is, the Yankees need to be all over it. They need to be in.
There were talks for Vlad, too, at the trade deadline this year. So yeah, that is, you know, it's not completely off the table.
It's not impossible, no. And if we see superstars move anytime in the near future, it's very likely going to be one of those two. Or if you want to talk about Garrett Crochet, the Yankees are also in on him as well. So there really are a number of guys who it appears they're going to be changing teams. You know, some on the market already, some projected to hit the market, that really go a long way towards shifting the landscape of what contending looks like across Major League Baseball right now. You know, if any of those guys end up in the hands of the Dodgers or the Mets or the Phillies or the Braves, that could potentially be incredibly scary for the rest of the league. And I don't think the Yankees are in that conversation right now. And if they want to get back into it, they will likely need to acquire one of those players. And doing so will be very, very difficult. You want to talk a little bit sort of about the free agents that they could go after immediately?
Yeah.
I mean, I only have pretty quick thoughts on
these. I'm looking at the
guys.
List. There's a few that pop out to me. Do you have any you want to start with?
Yeah. So you mentioned Pete, that you didn't want Pete at all. I'm kind of in the same boat.
I think it doesn't look good optically.
The optics is why it's the funniest option they could possibly go for. Swapping stars with the Mets. Worry about what the contract is going to look like. You know, that is a very big name. Would it be worth it for the Yankees? They badly need a first baseman. You know, maybe they've got something in Ben Rice, but they absolutely cannot go through this offseason content with Ben Rice as their only option at first base.
Well, they do still have DJ LeMahieu on the roster.
Yeah, but like,
I'm serious.
I almost boycotted.
We have to admit that that is something that the Yankees might try to do, because you need to be prepared for that now.
I am prepared for that.
So, you know, be aware. If they're still paying him, he might be around.
It could be much more efficient to go after Christian Walker instead of Pete Alonso. I think
if I were to take
one of their services with the price tag in mind, I would go with Christian Walker there. So I'm definitely interested in that. You know, we'll see where he signs. I haven't really heard anything about his free agency yet. certainly one of those guys that was like a domino for once Juan Soto signed. Teoscar Hernandez, I kind of think no on this one. I mean, he's not a Yankee Stadium defender. He's not going to be able to play left with Death Valley out there. Yankee Stadium is much, much better for left-handed power bats than right-handed ones. I'm reminded of how bad Teoscar was for the Seattle Mariners in 2023. He found a lot of success in Los Angeles last year, won a World Series, contributed heavily to it. I think he'll most likely stay there. I don't think he would necessarily be the best fit for the Yankees. Again, it's kind of that situational thing, you know, where they're like, if their two options are a player that has a proven track record, but, you know, might not be the greatest fit for the Yankees, or going into the season with a black hole at one of your most important positions, you know, then that's when they might be forced into a signing like this. But moving on from that, we touched on Corbin Burns, Max Fried a little bit already. If I'm the Yankees, I'm obviously prioritizing Burns, even with the price tag differential in mind. I think he's just a much more dominant starting pitcher than Max Fried. I don't make a whole lot out of the fact that his strikeout numbers went down last year. They spiked back up towards the end. I think we're going to see something much closer to the career average numbers for Corbin Burns in terms of whiffs than we did for like June, July, when he was still pitching very effectively, but just not really missing many bats for some reason. Like I said, though, I do still stand by my prediction that, you know, they'll go, one of those guys will go to the Mets and the other will go to the Orioles. Alex Bregman, elite plate skills. That is a trait the Yankees love. Power will almost certainly continue to regress. We have likely...
There's word that they don't love Bregman.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure what the ceiling is going to look like for him in his age 31 through 36, 37 seasons, which is likely the span of time that he's looking to sign for right now. I don't know that they would be able to justify the price tag there. I also think it's very likely that Alex Bregman just signs with the Red Sox now. I think that seems like a much better fit than it did a little while ago. I mean, they're going to be bringing up so much young talent this year that a guy like Bregman that knows exactly what a strike is and exactly what pitch to swing at and what pitch to not swing at, that'll be a very important presence to try and guide Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, and Christian Campbell. And then Anthony Santander, I think, seems like a trap. Again, a guy that's not going to be a Yankee Stadium defender, not going to be able to play left, really. And I think especially after the shit show we saw in the World Series, defense needs to be a priority for the Yankees this offseason.
Totally.
I expect that 2020...
I would like to see them lean towards defense and speed.
Me too.
But I've been saying that for years, and yeah, they probably won't do it. But
I don't want to see them...
I would like to see it.
Yeah. I don't want to see them like sacrifice too much in terms of power to go for the defense and speed. I think they just need to start seeing those things. Exactly. You got to make sure that those are traits that are present in the huge names that you try to build your team around in the future. Right. Like, you can't build another.
Don't be so willing to sacrifice that part, the fundamental part, because they've done that, you know? And by the way, that's another thing. Yankee Stadium right field is very friendly for a bad defender. Citi Field, I don't know how much you know about that outfield. It's huge. So, we'll see how that goes. That's all. But, you know, yeah, you mentioned a couple guys in there that I would like to talk about. Teoscar, I wouldn't hate, him coming to the Yanks. I know, you know, you said he does not profile well in the outfield. I don't disagree. Santander, I completely agree that it's a trap, but either one of those guys, I think, you, not to completely go back on what I just said, their bats, I think, as we talked about Santander, but Teoscar, I think, has some fire, and I think that kind of thing, I think it would soften the blow of losing one of your guys to the Mets to bring in a guy who just beat you in the World Series. And again, that's very optic heavy. That's very like narrative, you know, leaning stuff that isn't really that important, but it kind of is on like a very sub level. But I don't hate the way that that looks. So if you're a Yankee fan, you know, I don't think most people would be upset with bringing in Teoscar. Santander, I'd be worried about the contract. I don't think Teoscar is going to get a crazy, crazy contract. So you might feel a little bit better there. And I mean, aside from that, the hitters that are on the market are like Labor, which you're not doing. Jesse Winker, Paul DeJong, Goldie. I don't think you're going there. Randall Grichuk. And we already talked about Alonso. I wouldn't be opposed to bringing in Ha-Seong Kim. Like, he's a bit of a different look. You know, he's like, he doesn't really hit for a totally high average. He's a righty, but he's fast and he's a bat to ball guy. Like, he's a little IKF-y, so maybe not, but you know, and you know how I feel about Christian Walker. And Carlos Santana as a backup is old, but not a terrible option. So, man, it's light out there. You want to talk about hitting. And I mean, also one thing that we haven't even brought up, as opposed to, this would be moving on from free agents. So I guess, do you have any final thoughts on what I just said?
No, the last thing that I have to say, I mean, the last free agent on my list was Anthony Santander. And I mean, I was just going to say that I think 2024 was a career year for him offensively. I don't think that a team that goes out and tries to buy that value is going to retain it. So I don't know. I don't think that's, like, if Teoscar Hernandez doesn't get a huge contract, I don't think Santander will either.
Like,
I predict, you know, maybe Teoscar gets like a similar deal to like Frankie Montas, like 2 years, maybe a little more than like 16 average, maybe like 2 years, 44, which I wouldn't be be opposed to, like if the Yankees took that flyer, but I do think there are just better fits for him. I think there are better fits for Anthony Santander as well. So I would be pretty surprised to go out and see the Yankees go for either of those guys. That was going to lead me into, I mean, trade
Brendan
options.
Rodgers, by the way, is on the market, which a little intriguing. He's
that
a
is
righty.
A little intriguing, yeah.
I don't love it. I wouldn't be totally opposed to that. I just noticed that he's on this list. He's 28, hits about 270. Colorado guy, though, so you worry about that. But first round pick, you know, third overall.
Yeah, no, he's a good player, man. Wouldn't hate that.
Wouldn't hate that.
I was going to mention Seiya Suzuki as well. I mean, I know talked about Cody Bellinger a bunch this offseason. Like, I'm not particularly big on that, but I do think that Seiya Suzuki is a very good player. I would love to see him in pinstripes. It has been confirmed he is available on the market. So
I like Seiya, so that would be fun.
I'd really like to see that. And then from there, I mean, the two pitchers that I know are available, obviously Garrett Crochet, talked about him already. I think going to be a Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Orioles bidding war for him. Going to be going somewhere in the Northeast, most likely, but I don't know that it'll be to the Bronx. I think those other teams have a lot more to offer than the Yankees do, so I would kind of put them fourth in the power rankings there. I think he's more likely to go to the Orioles or to the Sox. I think those teams have the most to offer. Jesus Luzardo as well has 2 years on his contract. I think it might be 1 year left at this point. I think it's 2 years. Jesus Luzardo, 2 years left on his contract. His value has certainly gone down. I mean, it wasn't very high when the A's sold him to the Marlins, but he went down with another injury last year. Hasn't really shown much of an ability to stay on the field. When he was pitching, he wasn't pitching very well. It could be a good time to buy the dip on Jesus Luzardo and get him into the rotation. I mean, I think very likely Crochet will be the first pitcher traded, and then the teams that miss out there very likely might pivot to Luzardo. But do you have any thoughts on those guys?
I like the idea of Luzardo a lot.
Okay.
Definitely. That's pretty interesting. I've been looking at some other options that are out there. I don't know. Kevin Biggio, that do anything for you?
Like, no.
And you really, it's, you're scraping once you get past this main crop that we've talked so much about. I did want to also just bring up, like, as far as the Yankees go, Spencer Jones and Jason Dominguez have been a package deal waiting to happen. for a long time now, you know, are you going to trade him? Are you going to just stick him out there in the outfield together? Is that what we're doing? Like, are we run? Like, it seems like they're going to be a duo. That's going to, like, whatever happens with one of them, the other one is doing the same thing. I don't think they're going to trade one and not the other if they do end up doing that. So, I like, if there is a piece to make that happen, if it's Kyle Tucker or something, you're playing with fire, trading those two guys to the Houston Astros. So maybe not. But there is, there's definitely some stuff that it feels like maybe there. Nestor is another option to maybe deal with. But I just want to talk about Jones and Dominguez because, like, we're so desperate to talk about hitting and where to find it, and those two are supposed to be hitters. So if Dominguez, you know, it is kind of strange that it feels like he showed up in 2023 and flashed what we all were hoping for, and he gets hurt, and we all kind of forgot about him, and the Yankees started treating him poorly again in 2024. They bring him up. They don't bring him up. They let him play. They sit him. You know, and again, he didn't do much with what he was given, you know, to try, but he was still coming off of Tommy John, whatever that's worth. So it feels like there's a lot of people who are not giving up on him, but just kind of overlooking the fact that Dominguez were going to get full run for the first time as a starter. And we've been excited about him forever, so let's keep that going. You know, like, there's a reason to be excited about what he can bring to the table. And the only reason I say that is because Yankee fans who have been freaking out about, not yourself included, by the way, about how terrible this team is going to be for a decade now. Like, you know, and I know you didn't say a decade, but my point stands. Like, they still are a very talented team with a good rotation that has good pieces. So, I mean, you know, there are holes that they need to fill, but, you know, I'm excited to see what Dominguez has. I worry about DJ LeMahieu still being on the team. Caleb Durbin is a name that's getting thrown around a lot. That is, like, he apparently is going to be on the opening day roster, like, pretty much guaranteed at this point. I think that was Jack Curry who said that. So it's like, it looks like that's happening. So, I mean, prospects, you know, are always hit and miss, but it works for a lot of other teams. And the Yankees talked a big game about their farm system, you know, in the last couple of years, because it came under fire and they were like, no, we're good. So I think they have to kind of put their money where their mouth is there. You lose out on Soto, you now have to fill in those holes. You know, Austin Wells is your only lefty in the lineup with, oh, and Jazz. So, you know, you have Wells and Jazz. So Dominguez's switch hitting could really be important there. So we'll see what happens there. And also, Trent Grisham is listed as your starting center fielder. That's probably not happening. I'd imagine that's going to be Dominguez.
It is, yeah.
And you slide Jones into left field. So we'll see what happens there. You know, the internal options, you just have to hope are not showing up as rookies, and you hope that they don't end up playing like rookies. So, you know, that I think that's right now probably where they're looking, because as we've now hammered into oblivion here, there are not a lot of good options. So I don't feel too worried about leaning on those guys a little bit. And you have to hope that Volpe and Wells continue to develop. I don't know. It's tough. It might be a little lean for a little bit, but make those trades that we've talked about, Kyle Tucker specifically, maybe Vlad if you can do it, but I don't know. I don't think there's much more to talk about right now with the Yanks, unless you have anywhere final you'd like to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing that I'd say is just, it's a really weird feeling in the Bronx right now, because yeah, Soto going to the Mets gave me a lot of feelings that I hadn't felt since they acquired him in that trade, really. Right. I mean, like, I don't want to say that I'm right back where I was after the 2023 season. I don't think I'm quite that down on the future of the team, like, but there are legitimate holes on this roster, and I think given how Cashman's handled situations like that, it's very reasonable to say that I don't have too much confidence in him fixing these problems in the most efficient way possible. I hope that whatever decisions are made in the wake of this huge surprise, if that's what it was, around the Yankees organization, I just hope that those moves don't shoot the team in the foot for the next half decade. You know, yep. It's a time when they have to be very smart. They have to approach team building correctly. But at the same time, I'd like to reiterate, I do think they're still the favorites in the American League right now. I don't think that there is another roster that is currently stronger than the Yankees or will project to be stronger than the Yankees come April. You know, I mean, that could change. That would likely be the Orioles if it does change. I mean, if they go out and they make a trade for Garrett Crochet and then they go out and they sign a couple of these guys that we've been talking about, suddenly it's a very different team in Baltimore. And if you get Adley Rutschman playing anywhere above his floor, where he was for a lot of 2024, Gunnar Henderson continues his MVP pace that he was on all of last year. I mean, all of a sudden, that could be the number one team in the league for the next 5 years. But we're not there yet, and they haven't proven themselves as a team to be legitimately afraid of, especially in October. They face planted twice in a row. So until that changes, I'm going with the Yanks, honestly. And do you feel the same way? Like, do you feel simultaneously like the Yankees are completely doomed and also still might very likely make the World Series again?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to be, or a good spot to be in, because look, how are you supposed to react when your team loses a generational talent? That's kind of it. I mean, you know, like, you're in a weird spot. You're coming off a World Series and you lost your second best player. Like, reasons to feel good, reasons to feel like you're just falling through a void. Like, you know, but the thing is too, like, I've been trying to figure out a way to phrase this, but I want the Yankees to stop being the way that they've been and be better. And what I mean by that is stop hunting only value and start accepting when talent is staring you in the face and ignoring it because it's not at the price that you want. And Soto, I think they were really willing to do that. And they normally are good at not passing up on talent when it's their own guy, like when they've had them. Like, I think of DJ, you know, extending him. I mean, Judge, it seems like Cashman wasn't fully on board with, but you know what? Now that contract looks like, you know, nothing. So I don't think he'll be too upset about that going forward. But, you know, and also when they went out and they got Stanton, like, that was hunting value. You know, I think they need to be more proactive about hunting fundamental knowledge, you know, fundamental skill and talent rather than hunting strictly value. That's how you end up with, you know, like Trent Grisham on your team and, you know, Trevino is here. And again, Trevino has been fine. Grisham, for the role that he had, was fine. Like Jazz, you know, they gave up not much to bring him in there and he's, you know, not getting paid much. Like, and that's, he's a good player, but they went hunting for value. They weren't hunting for talent. And I think that right now they need to really focus on getting in more talent because the roster that they have some aging superstars and some really young guys who are unproven that need to really step on the gas. And if you want to supplement those two things, what you need in the middle is veterans with fundamentals and talent. And that is what they don't have. So I want them to go out and go get some guys who, you know, Bellinger is a good example. He's a very talented baseball player. He's had some injuries in the past, but he's, you know, a good defender. You can stick him in the outfield. You can stick him at first base. He's a talented baseball player. Like Verdugo, I thought was going to be that. Not so much. He was when he cared, you know, it seemed, but he was like hard to get him to, you know, to get up for games. That's why he was good in that first Astros series last year. You know, it's why he was good on like Friday night games. Like he'd make like a great play or whatever. I think when the moment was big, that's when he kind of focused. So like they need to focus on talent and fundamentals and stop just going after value. And if anything is to be taken positively from this race for Soto, they just showed you exactly how much money they are willing to spend when they see that the price is right. And if they're going to go out and spend $50 million in this offseason, again, I don't think that that's necessarily the right thing to do, as we've discussed now multiple times, and we've discussed that, we've discussed it already. But it's not there. Don't pass up the generational talents when they come by, like, you know, Freddie, I think of Mookie. I mean, they were never really in on Shohei. Although now I'm kind of thinking maybe you should have been, but I guess he was never coming here. It's and there's one other thing about that I wanted to mention with the talent thing, and that's being Sasaki as like a name that's being thrown around. And I know, wait, we talked about this before. we started recording, Sasaki, I just saw a article in a Japanese baseball magazine, which was very cool to see. They're apparently convinced that he can only pitch once every 10 days. So for all the people who are now going to be going out and saying, like, make sure you get Sasaki, we've discussed in the past, it's all kind of down to where he wants to go, considering most teams can only bid around the same amount of money. So we'll see how that goes. But there really is a belief that he can only pitch once every 10 days. And there's part of the Japanese contingent of baseball writers, apparently, that says that he doesn't understand that, and that he thinks that he will be able to just kind of do what he's used to doing, which is whatever he wants. So it was a really cool article in this Japanese baseball magazine that a friend brought back from Japan recently, where they were talking about how Sasaki leaving for baseball is kind of a shame because he doesn't know what he's getting himself into. And they also talked about how acquiring free agents is kind of lame because it shows that you don't believe in your coaching staff, which I thought was kind of interesting. Very different way to view baseball, but that's beside the point. But just, you know, right now, I think going back to the Yanks, just focus on getting talented guys in the door. Don't hunt value the way that you have been for the last decade. I assume you agree, but any thoughts on that?
No, I completely agree. Talking about these big name free agents, guys that the Yankees have not been able to acquire lately, with the exception of Judge, who is a homegrown guy. I mean, Gerrit Cole is really the big signing that they made, you know, over the past few years. But I think
and Rodon, which is interesting.
Oh yeah. When we think of these big name guys that the Yankees could have gotten and didn't, I mean, I think of Bryce fucking Harper, dude, because he wanted to be a Yankee.
Bryce Harper is the 1A.
Yeah, it is 1A. Yep. And kind of this whole conversation that we've been having all night, the situation that the Yankees find themselves in, have found themselves in for years now, where they were trying so hard to get Juan Soto on their team, and they traded to get him for a year and then offered him $760 million just to lose him to their crosstown rivals. They didn't have to be in that situation at all. They could have just gotten Bryce Harper. And I really wish they had, because look at the money that it's going to take now to sign superstar players in free agency like he was 5 years ago. And that contract, I mean, it looks like beans. So Harper, Manny Machado.
Beans. It doesn't look like beans. It is. Machado is another one.
Like, Yankee fans have been up in arms about that for so long, and like with very good reason. There is no reason that they should not have been all over those guys. And now it's like beating a dead horse. But as we're seeing, the horse continues to decompose. So in my eyes, go ahead and beat it. Beat the
horse
smell out of it.
Keeps getting up.
It's a shitty metaphor, but
no, it's not. It's like beating a dead horse, but it's not, because the horse keeps standing back up. And we keep on having to say, I thought we have taught you this lesson. Need to not keep getting back up and missing out on these people.
I thought we had beaten this horse sufficiently, and it turns out we had not. So that's sort of why
it keeps rearing that head.
Yeah, if we feel, it seems like Yankees fans run around in circles of discourse. I mean, that is why.
It just comes back to not signing Bryce Harper when you it could does. Have. Every time, yeah. Every argument about the Yankees just comes back to, why didn't you get Bryce Harper? And Soto, we said it last year on the podcast, getting him made up for that, and now he's...
Yeah, now he's gone. So
gone. It's so guess what?
No longer
I'm
made
start
up for
complaining about not signing Bryce Harper.
Yes, back to complaining. That's the main takeaway from tonight. We get to go back to being. We get to turn up the scale of being obnoxious like tenfold.
It's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and now we have a victim complex to that. How fun for the league.
I think we will be content to leave it there for the week. We did have a number of other free agent signings that went down over the past week or so. I feel comfortable talking about those next time. It's going to be a long off season. We will have quite a bit to discuss and quite a bit of time to do so. So you want to hear our thoughts on Willy Adames, Tyler O'Neill, Severino to the Athletics. It's going to be next week. We wanted to do it this week, but we went pretty long on Soto. So I guess I will try to stick the landing here with the biggest signing of the offseason is done. The most anticipated free agency in years across Major League Baseball has reached its conclusion, and it turned out to be the day that Mets fans have been waiting for decades, frankly. And he signed for 15 years, $765 million. It firmly puts
congratulations, Mets fans.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that. I'll pass on it, but it does firmly put the Mets into World Series contention talks for the foreseeable future. Like we stressed so many times on this episode, that is contingent on what they do the rest of this offseason. We fully expect them to bring in two or three more guys, whether that is via free agency or trade. But it does seem like the 2025 Mets are going to be considerably better than we see right now in their current form. And I believe if they want to compete for a championship next year, that is a total necessity. They need two more starting pitchers. They need a little bit of lineup help still, but they got their white whale. They got the guy that they had been clamoring for so long. And I think it's probably the biggest day for baseball in Queens, maybe since the 2015 World Series. So that is got
to
be
what. Well, yeah, that's why I wanted to say congratulations to the Mets fans, truly. Every sports fan deserves that feeling at least once, because it's a good feeling when you finally get your guy, especially beating out the Yankees. Like, you know, good for the Mets fans. They truly get to bask in a really cool moment. Sports fans deserve happiness.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of putting it.
Even if it's a team. And it's hard for me to do that.
And then as for the Yankees, you know, it'll be a little while before I think we see what the long-term vision is going to look like for the future of the Yanks. You know, their contention window is going to be wide open as long as Aaron Judge and Garrett Cole are on the active roster and are healthy and are going out there every day or every fifth day in Cole's case. There are a lot of questions that have popped up over the last 48 hours in the Bronx, and it's going to be very interesting to see over the course of this offseason how they go about approaching the solutions to some of these problems. But I think that is where we can leave that today. Brody, would you agree? Is there anything else that you want to say before we sign off for the week?
I would agree. Just let it be known that I was not coping.
Yeah, let it be known. There is no copium over here in the Mudville podcast.
No cope.
If you're looking for that, go elsewhere.
It's just, you know, get knocked out in the first round by the Phillies. You have no pitching.
Fully acknowledge that we just coped for like a good 30% of that episode. But hey.
It's true. You got to do something.
You got to do something.
You know, got to let it out.
You can't just sit there and do nothing. Absolutely not. If you are not aware yet, please go and sign up for the Mudville Patreon. You can get free updates anytime we put out any sort of content at all, whether it be a main feed episode of the podcast, an episode of Mudville at the Movies with myself and Tony Brown, some written content like the hypothetical trades that I published last week and that off-season moves that you published a couple weeks ago now that is a little bit outdated now that the Soto signing is done. But regardless, go check all of that out.
However, my predictions were pretty good.
I'd say so, yeah. Just saying. I think so. So go check all of that out. We have got quite the back catalog at this point of episodes for you to check out. At patreon.com/Mudville. It would really help us out if you guys are fans of the show and you've just enjoyed our company for the last hour and change. It would really mean a lot. So, but if you're not able to do that, we always appreciate, you know, 5-star ratings, iTunes, Spotify, whatever you can leave us. If it's a nice comment, you know,
or just
that kind of thing, yeah, does go a long way.
Message us on Blue Sky.
Yeah, absolutely. We're on Blue Sky. So, you know, hit us up if you're over there. it's going to be a long off season. We'll be back to talk about it, talk about whatever goes down next. So many question marks, so much yet to be uncovered, and I, for one, look forward to all of it. That'll be it for us this week. Goodbye.